one of the most powerful things for most people who are going to participate in a program with Influence Ecology, whether it's Fundamentals of Transaction or coming to the annual member conference, is the way that Influence Ecology actually talks about people's money and them caring for it. Influence Ecology does such a great job that people realize they got to pay attention to it. That one day they're going to have enough money, and they need to understand how much that is, and they need to be thinking about it and care for it and cultivate it. Influence Ecology does an amazing job of both. We need to produce these results so you can take care of your conditions of life. And one of them is you better have your money handled. Because one day, either you got to have your money handled or money is going to handle you and you won't like it.
Helping people build ambitious and satisfying careers, businesses, and lives. This is the Influence Ecology Podcast. Now, here is your host, John Patterson.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. I'm your host, John Patterson, the co-founder and CEO of Influence Ecology, the leading business education in transactional competence. Broadcasting from Ojai, California, this podcast features case studies, stories, and lessons from business owners, executives, and entrepreneurs who found real solutions, results, and satisfaction, not only with work, career, and money, but in every area of life. You'll hear how these ambitious professionals found that those who transact powerfully thrive. Our featured interview today is with Paul Adams of Sound Financial Group. He offers an approach uncommon to the financial planning industry. Rather than offer traditional sales-based planning, his team of financial professionals provides a tailored coaching and educational approach to helping clients define and reach elite financial goals. You'll learn how he reinvented his business model after careful consideration of exactly how he'd like to work and with whom. In addition to his specialized financial coaching, Paul is an accomplished speaker, conference panelist, and author. He's been interviewed by Forbes, Entrepreneur, and Inc. magazine to share his knowledge and passion for helping his clients. In our Guru Talk, we'll hear co-founder Kirkland Tibbles address the aims we have for work, career, and money, and how most of us forget that money is simply a tool of exchange. Here's the interview. Tell us a little bit about you.
Well, I'm a 38-year-old, coming up on 39-year-old married guy with three kids, ages 4, 5, and 6. So we have a busy household in our neck of the woods. We live up in the Seattle area. And as a company, we work with clients all over the country. We work with folks almost exclusively by go-to meeting. We help them with their financial affairs, helping plan more effectively for the future. And we use an educational and coaching-based model rather than a sales-based model, which has lent itself really well to the go-to meeting format so that people connect with us. Even if they're local here in Seattle, we do all of our meetings by go-to meeting so that husband and wife can actually get on the same page about money.
That's great.
Working with business owners and people that make basically between $300,000 and $1.5 million a year of income.
I do want to ask you about your commitment to personal development. You've been involved with the development of yourself as a person, as a professional, and so forth for quite some time. And I don't know that I've ever asked you about that. What's that journey been about? And what's happened along the way?
I would say the biggest thing that happened for me was something I didn't realize had happened to me until I was just, it's like 4 years ago. I had this big aha as to what had happened in my life that made some decisions that set my life on a path that got me chasing coaching and education differently than all my peers. And it was because I dropped out of college. I was about a year and a half into my degree, and it was in the late 90s. So at that time, you can kind of picture the tech bubble, what was going on with the stock market. And we had these professors that were saying things like, your clients can expect an 18% year-over-year rate of return. Well, I already had some of my licensing while I was going to college. And I would raise my hand and ask a silly question like, you know, if I tell a client more than 12%, I lose all my licenses and I can't be in the industry anymore. And they said, oh, the regulators haven't caught up with the quote unquote new economy. And I went, uh-oh. And so I dropped out of college. But what occurred for me then was what I said to myself about myself to myself was that I don't know enough. And I don't have a piece of paper proving I know anything. So I went after trying to be the smartest guy in the room. And what that caused me to do is then spend time traveling the country, trying to learn from the best business and personal development minds that I could. It started out with one coach that I had hired who coaches financial professionals. And that led to me getting involved in one educational program and then another educational program. And over that following 10 years, where most people finish college and then they go, oh my gosh, I don't have to read a book again for a while. But I spent a 10-year journey reading at least 12 books a year, oftentimes traveling the country trying to learn from people. And it wasn't until 4 years ago that I realized it was this self-interpretation of feeling like less than everybody else around me in the business world that caused me to continue my learning journey where most people relaxed after college. I don't know that I've relaxed yet. But that's what started me out was I don't have a degree, so I just need to be really smart.
And did you finally reinterpret your intelligence and start to figure out that you're a hell of a lot smarter than everybody else?
Well, I don't know about being smarter than anybody else, but what I did give up is gave up being the smartest guy in the room, because that's really hard.
Yeah, sure.
And for anybody that's ever thought I need to be the smartest or the best looking and ever got away from needing that, it's a way different way to experience life. And so I definitely got rid of the needing to be the smartest person in the room. But what I did need to do is be really, really proficient. And so that's why I continue to engage in stuff. That's how I found Influence Ecology.
Yeah, tell me about that.
So I had a gentleman that I'd been in an educational program with prior, where we actually had to fly to another country, and it was 10 days of pretty intense learning where they had taken an entire college course and boiled it into 10 days. You had 4 days and then a little bit of a 2-day break and then 4 more really intense, super long days. And this gentleman called me and he said, Paul, I don't know what you're doing right now, but I think you would really enjoy meeting these folks from Influence Ecology. Mm-hmm. And they only work by introduction. So you need to be introduced, but I'm happy to introduce you. And I said, okay, I'll take the introduction. And then I had a conversation with Drew and really enjoyed the way he talked about what Influence Ecology teaches. And it seemed to be pretty well in alignment with some things I'd learned in the past. And then last but not least was I was in the space of not having engaged in any personal education in quite some time. Hmm. I was still reading furiously, but I didn't have a group of people I was around. And I learned the term ecology from all of you, but I just didn't have the network I was inside of around learning outside of the industry stuff where people from the financial industry get together and learn stuff together. But I didn't have it with other business owners and professionals. In the past, I'd always had that. Hmm. So it was missing for me at the time that Drew and I spoke.
Clear. And what is it that attracted you to Influence Ecology and what we teach?
Number one, I really resonated with the idea of conditions of life and that we need to take care of these different areas. And if we don't take care of all of them, or at least take care of most of them to a certain minimum standard, they will blow everything up. Hmm. And I had been in the midst of not serious breakdown, but I had been working a lot. And so I was feeling pressure on certain domains of my life. And when I saw the graphic that y'all so often use that shows all the different conditions of life and whether or not you've met them satisfactorily or not, I was done and filled out the application. That's what attracted me to say, I think I need this. And I didn't really understand what FOT was or how often the homework would be. But the conditions of life lined up side by side and being in a consistent conversation, assessing how I'm doing against where I'd like to be was good enough.
Really good. I do want to ask you about your experience of Influence Ecology now or your study here and what you've learned. Here you are now. I just watched you at the last annual member conference rapping, doing your version of a rap inside of a game that we were all engaged in. And part of the game was, of course, to teach what we teach. What did you enjoy about your participation there and your participation at Influence Ecology in general to date?
Well, so let me speak to the annual member conference first, because that was by far the greatest individual conference I've ever been to. And for people that know how I've gone after education since age 20 are blown away when I make that blanket assessment. And it was that way for several reasons. Number one, what I was learning at the conference was all stitched back and tied to the same things I've been learning the prior 6 months. And so often when you go to a conference, you're either going to a conference from an organization that does not give you any real study ahead of time, or they do give you real study, but then whoever is the main personality behind it comes up with some brand new stuff to share with you at conference. So that was the first thing, is that those being in alignment, what I'd been learning is the same thing is now being taught on, allowed me to deepen all of my learning I had done both for the prior 6 months and have deeper learning for the time that I was at the annual member conference. So that was big. I had gotten the invitation to do the founders study with all of you. And what that did for me was that ability to have a conversation about what I had been learning and what I was going to learn. When it came to being in the conference and the fact that you give us a chance to practice everything we had been learning, practice building identity, practice speaking, practice transacting with other people, all the things that too often at conferences, you also sit back, put your feet up, you kind of take it all away, then you try to go do stuff with it when you get home. The fact that we were in the conference taking notes, watching other people practice, plus practicing ourselves in all the things that you'd been teaching, at least for me, since I'd just done the fundamentals and transaction the prior 6 months, but now I'm literally going in and using the stuff that I had learned while I'm learning about it. The best way I could describe it is if you could go do some enormous physical task and then retain the physical fitness from having done the physical task instead of being sore. That would be what happened for me at the annual member conference in the way that I interact and transact with people, understand personality types differently. And what I've told everybody is best conference I've ever attended after 18 years of attending different conferences.
Well, that's great. I accept acceptance. I've been to many, many myself, and it's a treat to put them on. One of the ways that I talked about what you described, I just spoke about this, I think yesterday or the day before with someone, but I was talking about the experience of the conference and what happens after the conference for people. And it's one of the things I think that many people are pointing out. So it's worth mentioning. And for me, it's worth beginning to find ways to talk about it. But if I, for example, learned to swim by getting in the water and swimming, I now know swimming. And when it comes time to swim again, I don't have to remember swimming. I now know swimming. I may have to practice a little bit, but I now know swimming, and so I can go swim. Similarly, like the conference, when we teach transactional competence, and you go to the conference and you learn transactional competence as a doing, as an experience, as something that lives in your muscles and your brain and your in all of that. You have all of that to call on in the moment in your life when you're transacting. That's the way that we teach and the design of our program of the conference itself. Is that a fit for you?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, when you had asked me to reflect on some of the things, like what was it like before, what was like, I actually, for the first time ever, and almost always when I've done some kind of education thing, whether it's specific to my industry or self-development or a business owner related thing, I can always say I was like this before and I was like this after. What's difficult when I had to reflect prior to our conversation today is really hard to think about, oh, what was I like prior? Because the way I think about it is if I could teach a monkey to talk, and then after teaching him to talk, I said, what was it like to be a monkey who couldn't talk? He doesn't know. Mm. And so I found myself having to really grasp for what difference did this make, because it made such a big difference. I'm not thinking the same way I was 7 months ago.
If you'd like to know more about influence ecology and our approach, you can register for free 30-day guest access. During this time, you can test drive our interactive webinars, online learning system, and private mentorship. Program participation is by application only, and successful participants earn candidacy into our advanced program tiers. Our members are an international assembly of ambitious professionals, business leaders, and executives from a variety of countries, industries, and cultures. To find out more, you can find a link in the show notes for this podcast at influenceecology.com/podcast. That's influenceecology.com/podcast. Or in the US or Canada, you can text the word ambition to 805-262-9008, and we'll send the registration link right to your mobile phone. Again, text the word AMBITION to 805-262-9008. Also in our show notes, you'll find all the links to websites, books, or special downloads mentioned in this podcast.
That's really, really well said, because I have the same kind of experience. We were sitting around a conference table a few days ago, and I think Kirkland had said, gosh, do you remember what it was like back when? And I certainly remember certain circumstances. I don't remember how I thought in the same way, because my thinking has changed so much. I just remember the circumstance around my health. I remember the circumstance around my money. I remember the circumstance around how many freaking hours I worked.
Yes.
Or that I didn't enjoy the kind of work that I was doing. I remember those things as situations or conditions, but how I thought is now difficult to conjure up.
Yes. I think that's well put. And I can think of so many things where I thought of something one way, and now I think of it differently, and I can articulate it, like how somebody thinks about a particular money issue. They can articulate, I thought this way before, now I think this way differently. And it's very difficult to do when it's something as all-encompassing as what you teach in Influence Ecology. I'm different with my spouse, my wife now. I'm actually different in the ways I'm helping my church be able to be effective in certain areas. Different in my business, different with my children.
It's very good. One thing, I don't know that you know this. In the final chapter of the book, Transactionalism, an Historical and Interpretive Study by Trevor J. Phillips, in the last chapter of that book's on education. And that chapter really is about a particular view of education where there is the marrying, thinking and doing. And if you think about the transaction cycle as a subjective and objective, and we put at the top of the transaction cycle thinking and at the bottom of the transaction cycle doing, and you put those together as a whole and something that's spinning all the time, think, do, think, do, think, do, think, do, then that starts to give you a clue as to how we design the conference, because the conference can't get done just from thinking and it can't just get done from doing. It's really those two things. I thought I would share that with you. I don't know if you've read that part of the chapter on education, but just love to get your comments or thoughts about that as I share all that with you.
Yeah, I think I've not yet had a chance to read it. It is actually sitting on my nightstand as the next book. What I think of when you mention the thinking-doing cycle and the idea that we have to do both is I think about it as how I look at whether or not somebody knows something. And so often people will say things like, well, I know how to do that. I can't tell you how many people just in my industry who I've coached, financial advisors I've coached in the past, because we work with both clients, but then sometimes I'll work with an advisor to help them be more effective. And how often they'll say, well, I know what it takes to get to $300,000 of income. All I've got to do is go do it. And how upsetting it is to them to just say, you don't know how, because if you knew, you'd have had it by now. And if you just pause long enough and say, I think I know how, and then go try to do what you think is going to work and then adjust. And that's what the conference did for me, was the think, take action, watch what happened, adjust. Mm-hmm. And I think of one thing I did in the conference that was an aha moment. And for lack of a better way of saying it, it was when I was in the audience and I had done something, you could tell everybody was like, oh, what a good guy. And then I made a funny comment. I thought it, and then I did it. And when I made the funny comment, a few people laughed, but I lost a bunch of people. And it had to do with sending money back into the kitty for the game. Like, I could have gotten money. I said, no, just put it back in the kitty. And everybody was like, oh, like what a good thing that he did. And then my funny comment was, I'll see it in a few minutes anyway, because I thought I was going to win the game. And my team did win. Although I lost the entire audience
In
that moment. Like, I may have lost all the audience in saying it just now, but to illustrate the point, I thought it, I did it, I saw the instant reaction. And then the thing I went up to and talked to you and Kirkland about after is how often in life I can lose people because I mean to say something that's just kind of cute or funny.
Yeah.
But in some way, it can push people back from me. People that are my personality type would be perfectly fine with it, my transactional personality. Other ways that people are wouldn't resonate with that. And I do something that doesn't further my relationship with those people. when I make some of those funny comments. And that would be impossible without the structure you bring to the conference of thinking and doing over and over again. That's just one example.
Well, it's a great example of what we mean when we say we hold a mirror up to your transactional behavior and personality. And I think that's one of the things we can talk about here, because it certainly is clear that you've benefited by coming to understand personality as we teach it, and the way in which you might address differing ways that people think and view life. So any comments about that?
Yes. One of the biggest ones is with my wife. Mm. So my wife and I are on the transaction loop or transaction cycle there, pretty much on complete opposites of each other. And my wife is of the personality that really likes making lists and getting things done. Mm. And I'm the one that loves coming up with the ideas of what we could do. Mm. And my wife is so much of the personality of wanting to get things done. If she does something she didn't put on her list, she will write it down just so she can cross it off. No kidding.
I love that.
It is really neat to watch her be that way and no longer be in any disagreements with her about her being that way and being able to help her. There are things that she feels like she needs to get done. I'm like, we don't need to do that. We can just skip it. She can't skip it.
Yeah.
And now I can go lend her a hand in trying to get some of those things done so that she feels better about whatever she's working on. So that's a big one. I have some people in my life that are really good at making assessments, but when I'm inventing something and I'm saying, hey, I think this could be a good idea, this would be a good idea, their feedback to me initially felt critical. And what I would do is overcome concerns, but basically I'd crush them really nicely with a smile on my face. But I already came with a certain amount of load to bear, if you will, and I just let them have it. Now realizing to just sit there and say, oh, hey, this one, this part, I promise we're not going to do anything yet. I'm not going to execute anything from this. I just want to get your thinking, and I'm trying to give you my best thinking to refine it. So don't worry, I'm not going to go implement anything, and watch the people in my company relax when I start coming up with new ideas. That's the two ways I've seen it most impact. And then other people, when they do what they do, they're not upsetting me anymore. And not that I get mad upset, but I would try to work with them as if they were me. And instead I'm like, oh, wait, you're just wanting to know what we should do with this. And they say, oh, yeah, these are the only two things I need you to do. They said, great. And they want to go do those two things for me, but they don't need all the other stuff I wanted to give them.
Very good. All right. Well, let's shift to your business model. I loved one of the statements in your notes about the financial services industry. And there is a tendency to accept the way it is when it comes to working with a client. And I've met many people, of course, in the financial services industry. And when we talk about the way it is, or this is just how it is, one of the things we'll do is we'll refer to what we call the current. So the current, for anybody who's never listened to any one of our podcasts, the current is what we call the sea of narratives out in the marketplace. And they tend to pull you in a particular way. And you could say that you and I get swept up in the current and off we go. And every industry has its own current. So if you are in the education industry, or you're in mining, or you're in politics, there is a current for your industry. And so in your industry, you certainly have pulled away from the current of your industry in some ways that I think are fascinating. And I'd love to hear a little bit about the process that you went through in moving your own offer. And in doing so, I'd love to leave people with some takeaways along the way. So you shifted your offer. How'd you do that? How come you did that? And what can people learn from what you did and how you did it?
To start with, just to give folks a little bit of background on what shifted. I'm in an industry that is typically totally sales-based, meaning that when somebody meets with a financial advisor, more than likely that advisor is going to have some kind of relationship where there is a meeting, an initial meeting, and then they get some kind of information from the client, and then they go back to their office and they come up with a proposal, and they come back and they pitch that proposal and they hope that the client will transact in some way. Now, years ago, I didn't like that. I got somewhat successful at it in my early 20s, but I didn't like how it felt. It just always felt like finances and dealing with your money is too intimate to take that intimacy of your future financial decisions and subject it to a sales conversation. So I had designed a process that I would take people through. And I used this process for years and years and didn't charge for it. And it was a series of meetings over, you know, maybe as long as 3 months that people would engage in, and they would get the chance to learn about their money and get coaching around their money from us based upon the fact that we would hope that they would transact with us when it was all done. And it worked good. Like about 95% of people, if they worked with me specifically, 95% of them would transact. And when I started going through the Fundamentals and Transactions program with Influence Ecology, what occurred for me was I thought, wait, this is really good by itself. The process I'm journeying people through is actually good enough to just charge for. And so that was kind of the first shift, is that when I realized it was good enough to charge for it based upon some things I learned during the Fundamentals of Transactions. That was part one. Part two was then realizing that it also took better care of my clients' concerns if we charged, because there's never now this thing in the back of their head waiting for whatever other shoe to drop, like, why is this person spending so much time with me when they haven't made any money yet? So that's the second thing that I handled. And then the third thing that changed for me is I originally started working with people by go-to meeting and working with them by web and clients all over the country, almost as a factor of how far apart we were. And what I realized in the Fundamentals of Transaction program, that what it was actually doing for our clients is getting husband and wife or spouses to be on the same page about their money in a way it otherwise wasn't available. Meaning, even if I was nearby, but one spouse had to get childcare or both spouses had to leave their offices to come and convene on my office, they're going to ask the advisor to get something done by the end of the second meeting. Versus the unique way we've been engaging people online has actually created the space in people's lives, not having to drive back and forth, not having to be, for many people's occupations in our area of the world and other highly competitive environments, it's very difficult to say, I'm going to be out of the office for hours to go meet with my financial advisor. Because if they do, people will judge them on that inside their work environments for being gone. But if they just close their door and have a 1 hour meeting, nobody thinks anything of it.
Right.
So it's created the opportunity for people to stay engaged. So that's, those are the things that FOT did at first. What it ultimately did is now our entire process has the ability to be done in 5 to 6 weeks, whereas before it would take 3 to 4 months. What that's done for us is allowed clients to learn more rapidly, and more importantly for us, allowed me to stay more laser focused with them. And now, like this August, we're going to take a month and go to Alaska with my family, because now that everything is set up as these more targeted completions of the design phase of people's finances, I can schedule them in a way that makes room for me to be gone for extended periods of time with my family.
That's great.
Those are the big things that happened right out of FOT. If it's okay, I'd love to share something I got from the conference that was a game changer for me.
Oh, please.
And any of my clients that are listening to this are going to go, wait, he said that to me. And it was something I wrote down that Kirkland said from the main stage early in the conference. He said it almost like a joke, but of course, knowing Kirkland, he didn't say it at all like a joke. He just performed it well. But he said at some point in his career, and I think it was having to do with some of his Hollywood stuff, he started to tell people at a certain stage of the transaction, here's what I will do and won't do. And so now when a client wants to pay our fee to work with us, which is not insubstantial, once they engage and they want to do that, one, they apply. They have to apply to become a client now. That's a huge change for us. No, we say, we give the same philosophy conversation to everybody. We don't care if you make $2 million a year or $200,000, you get the same philosophy, and we don't ask anything about your money. This is who we are. If you want to, after that meeting, you can apply and nobody's going to close you. Nobody's going to come after you. That's a big change. You can apply to become a client. Once they do apply and we get to the end of that, we feel like we can engage them and it'll make sense to engage with them, for them and for us. Then they say, yes, we want to go ahead and pay your fee. I say, great. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you what I will do and what I won't do. And then I'm going to ask you again if you still want to pay it. And I go through certain things that we require of our clients, which are not a small standard. And at the end of that, they say yes or no. So, now, nobody said no yet. but we give them the full opportunity to engage with the way we're willing to engage them, which for me includes, here's the things I will personally take care of for you. And then here's all the other things that I'm not going to handle for you. My team is going to handle. And you got to be okay with that, because otherwise I don't have the freedom I want. So that was one of the most profound things I got from the conference. And the insights from that took one whole page of notes.
I can imagine. Well, as one of the co-founders and a guy who's designed all of this stuff to sort of work together in a particular way, what I'm aware of, your description of that is what we want and are committed people get from the design of the Fundamentals of Transaction program, which is that you have the opportunity to take a look at every condition of life, ask yourself a very serious question. Does this, as it is, work for me? And if not, what would satisfy this? Then you start to get clear about the amount of money that you seek to make, the amount of work that you'd like to engage in or not, how you'd like to work or not. You start to ask questions about how you'd like to be known in the marketplace. You start to ask all these very, very serious questions about the satisfaction of all these conditions of life, and then reconstruct an offer, or perhaps even build one for the first time, but to build it or reconstruct it so that it fits all those conditions.
Yes.
And in your description of all of that, you have trained your customer to work with you in a new kind of way. You have reinvented the process in which you acquire a customer, bring on a customer, onboard a customer. You've shifted the stuff you used to give away, and now it's part of a process. You've completely re-engineered the process itself to make it a product in and of itself. And on and on and on, all to your own freedom, your own increase in income, your own say about who you will and won't work with, and so forth. You are a model example of the commitment of that program. Well, anything you want to say about that?
Well, just something I haven't said yet on the podcast I think is key is my deep, deep appreciation for you and for the work that Kirkland and Drew and everybody does to have created the environment that I just got to walk into. Y'all been doing this for years. And I got to walk in and get learning that you have been refining for years and years and years. Even before forming Influence Ecology, you all were out learning things that I then got to benefit from. So while I might have been the output that you would anticipate somebody would get from having done your conference, good thing you were thinking about that for years before, for me.
You're absolutely welcome. It's a pleasure. When a guy says, hey, I get to now go take a vacation, I get to plan my vacation, I've restructured my business offer so that I can have the free time I want, I can take the vacation I want with my family, I can spend more time with my church, I can, and on and on and on. And by the way, I'm not working more. I'm not working harder. I'm not laboring more. I'm not working with people I don't want to work with. And all those kinds of things. When you get all of that and I get to hear all that stuff, I am a happy, happy guy. Nothing makes me happier. In fact, when you talked about your vacation in Alaska coming up, that's what I'm here for. That's what I'm here for. I want people to be able to have that kind of experience and freedom and so forth. So, so, so glad to hear all that.
I do need to say something just for my wife's sake when she hears this. We don't call them vacations anymore with our kids being as small as they are, ages 4, 5, and 6. They're trips.
trips. I understand.
My wife is like, I don't get a vacation. My job comes with us.
Yeah.
But when we take a month-long trip to Alaska to do that, it's actually a precursor to something my wife and I decided to do as a part of the learning I've done in Fundamentals of Transaction and the annual member conference, and that is, in 2 years, we're going to take the family, we think, on a full year of being on the road with our RV and yet still be able to engage in the business. Because now, the other thing FOT has made me realize is the idea of concentrating. And when you guys gave the idea that concentrating is removing all diluting factors, We are absolutely removing everything from what I do in the business, this really exceptional employee that I have inside Sound Financial Group named Paul Adams. What are all the things I'm having him do that he ought not be doing? As we continue to get effective at peeling those things back, it'll mean that I can be on the road and work for 6 hours a day, 3 days a week, no matter where we are, totally location irrelevant, in a way that I don't think would be possible if for us to do that and reach the level of income we want to be at if it weren't for Influence Ecology. So beyond the 1 month trip, that's just a testing ground for what we actually plan on doing in 2 years.
Really, really great. Well, Paul, I appreciate all that you said so far. If there's anything else you'd like to add or be said about your company or your journey, anything.
Something about Influence Ecology that I noticed that I think is one of the most powerful things for most people who are going to participate in a program with Influence Ecology, whether it's Fundamentals of Transaction or coming to the annual member conference. What I noticed more than anything is the way that Influence Ecology actually talks about people's money and them caring for it. I've had people that get massively discouraged by a speaker around money and them taking care of their financial future. But Influence Ecology does such a great job with the way that you and Kirkland have built the organization that people realize they got to pay attention to it. That one day they're going to have enough money and they need to understand how much that is. And they need to be thinking about it and care for it and cultivate it. And even though you guys don't make an offer in that specific realm, what I see way too often at organizations that are working on personal development is it might be all about rah-rah, let's make as much money as you can. Or sometimes on the other end, it's just motivation and it's how good can we make you feel and we don't care if you make money or not, but just continue to pay our organization. Influence Ecology does an amazing job of both. We need to produce these results so you can take care of your conditions of life. And one of them is you better have your money handled. Because one day either you got to have your money handled or money is going to handle you and you won't like it. But you all really do a great job of caring about the things for your customers that they may not know they need to care for yet. And for me, being somebody that sometimes feels like they're telling people about paying attention to money and people are totally ignoring that, to see you all take care of it just in a highly ethical and moral way to make sure that people are caring for it is really great to see. And so for anybody who's listening and wondering about that is Influence Ecology does a great job of helping people handle those conditions, even the places where they don't directly make offers.
That's really great. I appreciate you saying that because one of the things that Kirkland and I are committed to as a point of difference for our company is oftentimes if you participate in something, especially with certain kinds of educational programs or the like, the company, the educational program is often not concerned with that you ought not participate. We have an application process and there are people who we say, listen, it's really not a fit for you to participate, as opposed to we're going to chase you down and try to get you to pay even though you can't afford it. Or we're going to have you go into debt even though you can't afford it. We know that there are times where people are complete with their participation or they're complete with an aspect of their participation. And we're not sitting there telling them they should continue to participate because it'd be good for them. What we are committed to is that people live a satisfying life, whatever that looks like for that person, objectively, in a variety of different conditions. And where someone ought to go away from Influence Ecology, they ought to go away from Influence Ecology. And if they ought to go study something else, or if they ought to go whatever it may be, then that's what they ought to do, because that's what a satisfying life looks like for that person.
And as a student of yours that is introducing other students, I've got to say that the fact that you all take that stand, but hey, this may not be a fit for you, here's why, makes me feel far better about introducing people, because I know that you will take care of them even if it means them not being a part of the organization. And the great thing about that is also makes it easier to introduce people, not just for my own psychology, but for them to say, hey, Influence Ecology is going to have a conversation with you. And if it's not a fit, if it's not appropriate for you, they're going to tell you doing what you said you'd do in that area makes it a lot easier for me to introduce people.
It's great. All right. Well, Paul Adams, it is a pleasure to know you. It's a pleasure to have you on the podcast today. I certainly appreciate this. It's been a blast. And thank you so much for being here.
It's been great. Thank you so much for having me. And I always look forward to our conversations. Thanks again.
As I said in our Guru Talk, we listened to a segment of a public webinar we offer titled Your 2017 Aims for Work, Career, and Money. In this talk, co-founder Kirkland Tibbles addresses how most of us are naive to money as the tool of exchange. Here's the talk.
Since this is the year of money, Kirkland, and we are talking about the tools and consequence of economic exchange, anything that you care to say to include people in what that means or what they may want to examine in developing their competence around the tools of money?
My aim for our customer this year around money, my personal ambition here is to take away any notion of superstition around money, to take away all of the nonsense and the narratives that surround money that try to make the production of it, the creation of it, the production of income, for example, how you actually make money, anything associated with how you attain and acquire cash, income, money, the service that you provide and so forth, anything related to it. I'd like to rip out any superstition or any notion other than this, that it is a tool. It is a tool that was invented to facilitate exchange. And let's spend a year together with that particular orientation. Let's spend a year together concentrating and focusing on money as a tool and nothing else. Money is a consequence. It's produced as people exchange help in the marketplace. Period. End of story. And if we take the time and we reflect on it that way, it starts to drive it into a pretty simple dialogue that if you want to make money, you must produce valuable exchange with another human being. That's as simple as it gets. It is nothing more than a tool. If you, and this is where I get into trouble, John, and I accept this trouble I get into, especially this year, where I say, treat money like a pair of pliers or any other tool. It's not something that you're going to be able to create as some reward for good behavior. We all know people. In fact, there are lots of them who are kind of awful people who have a lot of money. They don't behave. There are some heinous people in the world who have lots of money, and it's not because they're heinous people. It's because they know how to produce an exchange in a very particular spot called the marketplace. They know how to produce valuable exchange. There are really good people out there, good people who do great works, who suffer with no money. That is just because there's that kind of conduct isn't a foundation for what produces money, because money is like a pair of pliers. If you think you can manifest a pair of pliers because of your good behavior, then that's incorrect.
That.
We've tested it in my office with people who tend to relate to it. And part of it is because the role that money plays in our existence today, it is a condition of life. We cannot survive. We don't do well without money. That's just how it goes. It's just where we are right now. Would I like to see it change and that we operate, good people do better than bad people? Or, of course, but that right now, what we have to confront, and over the course of this year, what I'm inviting people to consider is, what would it look like to take on money as nothing more than a tool of exchange? It might have you stop and consider that what's wrong with your offers in the marketplace or anywhere else is that they're just simply not as valuable as you think. They don't produce the kind of help. Maybe they did at one time and they don't now, and they need to be reinvented. Maybe what's wrong with your enterprise or your good idea as a lone wolf out there trying to do it all by yourself, maybe what's wrong is that in your head it's a great idea, but the marketplace hasn't accepted and you haven't accepted that. Maybe you're just wrong about your good ideas and you need to take a very serious look at why people are unwilling to exchange their hard-earned cash for your good ideas. Maybe you're not moving effectively just around this whole notion of exchange, and some of you need to raise your prices. One of the first things we do with people when we start working with them is we ask them to consider that maybe they are not moving effectively around their own value for their own offers in the marketplace. Maybe they don't value their offers enough. Maybe you're not respecting your offer enough to say no to a certain kind of customer that is so high cost that it's not even worth transacting with them anymore. Some of you need to let some of your high cost customers go. Some of you need to change your thinking around this thing called exchange and stop acting like it's going to show up if you just do the work. That whole notion that exists in the current, that if you just do good work, you work really hard, you have a great attitude, and don't worry about anything else, the money will follow, is one of the best lies out there. And I ask you, just for this period of time, just for 2017, reject that notion.
In our next episode, we interview Dr. Kira Gaunt, a New York professor who conducts research on the unintended consequences of social media, often offering expert testimony on the subject and helping protect our future employability and reputation online and off.
An unintended consequence is thinking that you know what's going on. Like, I just had surgery. I thought it was one thing and the doctor was like, nope, it actually was you had a fracture. I'm treating it for another thing and that's what's going on. So online, this happens because people of all ages, they feel like they're talking to their friends. Some of these are friends you know and know offline, and some are friends you've only met online, and some are friends you don't know offline at all or online who are just passing through on your wall on Facebook. And you go and say a comment about your boss because you think that your friend group is closed, like you chose that privacy setting. What happens is, so you post that, one of your friends likes it, and then when they like it, you expose the post to all of their friends.
If you enjoyed this episode and would like to share it with others, you can find it and share it from our website at influenceecology.com. You can also find us on iTunes to subscribe. We'd love to know what you think, so please take a moment and offer us a review. Thank you for another great episode of the Influence Ecology Podcast. I'm your host, John Patterson. I'd like to thank our guest for a great interview. In our show notes, you'll find links to connect with them and all the links to websites, books, or special downloads mentioned in this podcast. This podcast is made possible by the brilliant work of the Influence Ecology staff, mentors, and members around the world. We're grateful for co-founder Kirkland Tibbles and his 30-plus years of specialized study and practice that make all this possible. Episode producer, editor, and music supervisor Jason Kelly. Podcast copy and show notes, editing, and links by Carol Gregory.